Yeah. We don't want to be permanently in this position. Right. Unless I get a beanbag chair. If I could do this from a beanbag chair, I'm in. Game on.
Okay. Any other chair? Director's chair? What else?
I don't think director's chairs are as comfortable. Like, I think you're, you know, high up, but there's no arch support there.
That's true. You know? They feel powerful, though.
They do feel powerful. I feel pretty powerful in a beanbag.
Because you have your name.
Have you sat in a beanbag recently? They're pretty powerful.
I don't think I'd feel very powerful. I feel like I can't get up.
Like a turtle on my back.
I'd like roll out. Help. It's very vulnerable. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nassaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
No, Lisa McCarter.
Nah.
At time of recording, she's still in France.
Allegedly.
But we have moved studios.
Yeah, check this place out.
So we're actually in my office.
It's swanky. It's clean.
It is cleaner. Yeah.
Cleaner.
Yes. For the summer, if you've not heard, they're doing construction around the building.
Ooh.
And our old studio is being painted. So we had to
Among
move.
Other things, yeah.
Among other things. Yeah. So we had to move. So now we're in our new studio.
Our new temporary studio. Yep.
So if it sounds a little funky, bear with us. We'll be adjusting things as we kind of go.
It sounds great to me right now.
I think we're, you know, if not the quality of the podcasting, the quality of the content will sound just as good as before.
Chef's kiss.
Now, if that was good or bad for you, nothing has changed.
But it will be just as good as it was before.
The same level, whatever that looks like.
Consistency is what we've come to learn after these, my goodness, 7 years?
Yeah, we just did 350 a few weeks ago.
Woo, buddy.
Yep.
When we started this, did you think we were going to be doing it in 7 years?
How could we keep finding things to talk about?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we haven't. Yeah.
Well, I mean, originally, this is, you know, a little bit of memory lane here. Originally, we had, like, topics. We didn't do articles. We had, like, topics we're going to talk about. We ran out of those pretty quick.
We did. We had a giant list, it felt.
Yeah, and we were done by Christmas. Like, we started in August, and we're like, Christmas. We're like, oh, we got to do a Christmas episode, and then we're out of ideas.
Yeah, and we pivoted more towards being a Christian culture podcast.
And it turns out that crazy stuff keeps happening in the world. So
who knew? Something related to Jesus. Keeps on keeping on.
There you go.
All right, let's talk about airlines. We talk about airlines a lot because a lot of crazy things happens on the airlines.
I'm gonna be flying soon. What do you got?
Great. Well, if you are gonna be flying soon.
Mm-hmm. Should I pack a bag, not pack a bag, bring an animal?
I'll tell you what you should not do.
Okay.
This is according to CBS News.
All right.
Well, first you need to bring your actual ID.
I do that.
Yeah.
I've heard people trying to get through with like Costco memberships recently.
But you should not use your Costco card. This is the article, yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Costco card is not a real ID at TSA.
That's good to know. And they just did like that whole new like real ID thing, like where you have to have like the special updated ID or whatever.
Did they?
Yeah. Oh. If you've gotten your ID in the last like 5 years, you're fine.
Have I? Maybe. Hopefully. Right. I have gotten a Costco card in the last 5 years. So.
That does not count. Don't do that.
Evidently not.
Yeah.
Yeah, TSA said, so first, why did this happen?
Oh.
Why are people thinking you could use a Costco?
Because
in my mind, no. This is an obvious no.
Is it because people are idiots? Like, is that, no offense to humanity, but we're all kind of dumb?
Yeah, we're all kind of dumb. No, a blog thing from Chowhound.
Okay.
Published an article titled "How Your Costco Card Could Save You at the Airport."
Oh God!
And they insinuated that you could use your Costco card as a form of identification. I mean, I guess, like in my mind, like what is the scenario where I find myself at the airport going through TSA, and I do not have my driver's license,
but
yet I do have my Costco card.
Yeah, so I will say I think it's more likely to happen to a woman carrying a purse than to like us carrying a wallet. Because everything I have is in my wallet. If it's not in my wallet, I don't have it. Like, it doesn't exist, right?
And For sure.
So I either have my wallet or I don't have my wallet. I don't open my wallet and make sure my ID is there. It's in my wallet or I don't have it at all. But if you have a purse, like you might be like spots in the purse where you keep like a Costco card or something like that in the purse that's separate from, I left the piece that has my ID in it at home. So I could see that.
So the Costco card stays in the purse. The wallet comes in and out of the purse.
I could see that. Okay. I'm not saying it makes sense to me, but I carry a wallet. So
sure. Yeah. In my mind, I'm like, well, if I don't have my license, that means my wallet is gone.
Right. Exactly.
There's no scenario where
Costco card, not my concern. My wallet is gone.
Yeah.
That's the problem here. Yeah.
It's not like I keep my Costco card in like a travel belt with my money.
I keep my Costco card in my front pocket at all times. Yeah. But my wallet, my ID,
I wear it around a lanyard around my neck.
Everywhere you go, it's your identification.
Just in case, so everybody knows, Costco. I'm a Costco member, no big deal.
Do they have like levels? It's like Costco Gold member.
Mine does have a level because I'm a business member.
Ooh, there you go, business member.
I have a three-lord life.
You're welcome.
TSA does say, we love hot dogs and rotisserie chicken as much as the next person, but please stop telling people their Costco cards counts as real ID.
What would, like, why would Chowhound even insinuate that you could use your Costco card what's the goal here?
So here.
Is it just to screw with people?
Here's what they said.
Okay.
Chowhound? Basically, as he is, if you do not have your ID and you go through TSA.
Okay.
They have ways of getting you through there if you've lost your license, right? You're on vacation and your wallet
lose
is stolen.
Lose your driver's license, yeah.
Can still get home.
Sure, they have options.
Yeah, and so this is saying, like, this is like a starting point. It's not the end point, but you're starting with a photo and your name.
Yeah, that at least helps.
And that they're still going to have to do all the same things to confirm your ID through their verification process.
Lots of other stuff, yeah, okay.
But I don't think that's true anyway. I don't think that this is going to matter much one way or the other.
I mean, I could see that having something with your photo and your name on it would at least be a starting point. But it's not going to be like, oh, yeah, just come on through. You got your thing right there. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But recently, past couple times, they're like, do the little face scanny thing.
Yeah.
So I started using TSA PreCheck when I started traveling internationally.
Look at you. Wow.
I know, right? And they do the little face scanny thing. And they didn't even like need to see my boarding pass.
Okay.
It's like they just knew it right away.
I don't know how I feel about this.
I know. Pretty soon you're not going to need an ID, right? You're going to get there. They're going to scan your face. They're going to know who you are. Or we're going to Mission Impossible it, and nobody's going to know who anybody is.
Are more scary. I don't care about the TSA as much, but you're going to be walking to the airport, and all the ads are going to pop up and just be like, David, you look like you need a Starbucks, like, because they're scanning your face as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's more terrifying. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right.
Starbucks save your money.
TSA does want to qualify. Can you bring a rotisserie chicken onto the plane from Costco?
It's not a liquid.
You bet your drumsticks.
If it fits your carry-on, yeah.
They said cooked or raw, it's allowed in a carry-on or checked bag.
Raw?
What? And also checked bag? Look, there may be things that are allowed, but this breaks social norms.
Should not. Yeah.
If I'm flying and the person next to me opens up their bag and they've got a Ziploc baggie of raw chicken.
Yeah.
Call the feds. Like, this is
the,
now
the air marshal.
This is now a terrorist attack. This cannot be allowed.
Salmonella outbreak on this plane.
Also, who is checking rotisserie chicken? Like, I need this chicken when I get there.
I mean, maybe you're
throw it underneath the plane, everybody.
Maybe you're flying into a family dinner, and so you need to have this rotisserie chicken ready for family dinner when you get there. You told them you would bring the chicken.
Yeah, so I'm going to say, TSA, this is, you don't need to be putting this out for people. I do not want anybody bringing raw chicken onto a plane.
My sister did once fly with a container of frozen soup.
Okay.
Yeah, and they let that through. It was frozen. It was a solid. They let it through.
And what, like, she, like, let it thaw?
I don't know what she did with it after that. She just said that's what she did.
I don't understand. Like, do you need soup that badly?
I'm just telling you what happened, all right?
How did she, did she eat it on the plane?
No, I think she got to a place and then, like, had it.
Okay. All right, whatever, you know.
I don't know.
All right.
I'm just saying, the thing that was a liquid was frozen as a solid, so then she was allowed to take it through.
Yeah, yeah, all right, look.
If you can freeze your liquid explosives, they're just fine.
That is fair. Yeah, just let it thaw. Sit on it. And then
like an egg.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to our main topic.
I'm going to take a rotisserie chicken next time I fly.
Or raw chicken?
No, rotisserie. Okay. Cooked one.
Sure.
Next time we fly for a mission trip, I'm going to bring a rotisserie chicken. I'll share it with the youth group. It'd be great.
All right. That'd be interesting. You know, if my neighbor ate a whole rotisserie chicken on the airplane.
Would you be impressed?
I kind of. I'm like, all right, you know, this guy is living in in 2033, yeah. or 2036, you know, whatever year it is. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. From Baptist News Global.
Okay.
We have used Baptist News Global. They are not.
We've used Baptist News. Have we used Baptist News Global?
I think this is. They're the same. This is not SBC. Like this is not SBC Baptist.
No.
So that's not Southern Baptist Church. This is. There's more Baptists beyond that.
Yeah. Just like there are more Lutherans than the ELCA.
Correct. All right. And this is an opinion piece by Martin Thelen. And he's asking a good question.
Okay. What's Martin's question?
The headline, Five Possible Paths for 21st Century Churches.
Okay.
And I want to clarify, this is individual churches, not the global church, or not the American church.
Patrick is clarifying that because I did not understand it when we were talking about this off air. So, yeah, good clarification. Okay. Got there.
But it says, like, your church, what should you be doing this
congregation,
century?
Yeah.
We've got five paths.
Okay, five options.
According to Martin. Here.
Okay. At least, things to think through. Sure.
Sure. Yeah. Now, it's no shocker that Christianity in America is on the decline. And every generation is getting less religious. Now, our Gen Alphas are getting more, maybe?
Maybe.
But
at least more spiritually interested.
Yeah. They adhere more to, like, the 80s, 90s, like, youth group culture than 80s and 90s kids did, and that they drink less and have sex less. And they don't smoke at all. They vape, but, you know, they don't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
But, and there is a mild uptick there amongst young men.
Okay.
And women are kind of continuing the leveling off process.
Okay. All right.
But, so, okay. Maybe, maybe Gen Alpha is a little bit more promising than,
see what's going on.
Than the Mills and the Gen Xers. All right. So here's the five things. So, hey, Christianity's on the decline. Things are shifting and changing at your churches. Your church is probably aging up, you know, like the average age is going up, you know, the trends.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Sure.
Martin's got five things.
Okay.
Number one, maintain the status quo.
Are we going to talk through each one individually or are we going to do the list and then break them down?
We're going to go individually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So keep everything the same. Just keep on keeping on.
Great.
So I'll just go ahead and say if the plan is to keep everything the same, then any given congregation doing that has, I don't know, depending on the size of an endowment or something like that, a limited number of time until they're done. What you'll hear from church development people and things like that as they study these trends, if a church is literally just staying the same and plateauing, they're actually decreasing, right?
Yeah.
Like over time, it's going to be, you know, are they starting with 1,000 members or are they starting with 100 members? And then it's an X factor until they get to zero. Right? The status quo does not seem like a viable option path forward.
I think, if you're a status quo church, maybe the idea is like we outlast the church across the street and then they come to us because they want to go to church.
Yeah. Or we keep the status quo because we're only 10 people that are left here and we like it the way it is. And
we'll get to that one.
We keep the status quo until we're done. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is more of like, this acknowledges other churches are going to probably be going under or are losing members. But if we maintain even like a healthy ministry will naturally kind of break even, probably not by adding our unchurched neighbors, but by adding churched neighbors who need a new church.
Sure. Yeah.
Because their church did one of these other four and they're not happy there.
Yeah.
So I think most churches probably are landing on just keeping the status quo and just kind of hoping for the best in a sense.
Yeah.
And maybe their things are going well. So why would you want to change? And maybe, like you mentioned, like maybe they're saying, hey, other churches are in the decline. Our church is about the same. Let's just keep going because we're doing something right.
Yeah, well, that is one of the factors of change studies as well, right? That for people to be willing to and interested in change, the pain of staying the same has to be greater than the pain of the change. And so as long as there's a certain level of comfort and stability in maintaining the maintaining the status quo, then there's no incentive to change, right? Because change is painful regardless, right? Whatever path you might choose, change is going to be painful. And so as long as that is more painful than maintaining the status quo, there's very little incentive to take that on.
Yeah, and I think he's kind of, in his write up here about this, you know, another challenge here is he kind of talks about a friend who was a Vietnam War vet.
Okay.
And he says, when I first went to Vietnam, I had a clear sense of mission, save the world from communism. As the weeks and months progressed, the war, you know, was insane and crazy and awful.
Yeah.
a new mission happened. Survive today.
Yeah.
That's the new mission. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters, is I need to survive right now. And so this is like most churches, as they start up or as they build momentum, a very clear sense of mission, a very clear sense of how are we going to serve our neighbors, this community, what are our goals, all these things. And then when we lose ground a little bit, or we kind of get to a certain place or a certain age as a church or congregation, we land on the new mission is
survive.
And that's all that matters, is keeping this thing going.
Yeah.
And we keep the budget for another year. We keep the programs for another year. We keep the staff for another year. That's all that matters. And if we did that, we success.
Yeah.
But that's not any kind of acknowledges, like, that's hardly a mission worthy of like real time and energy.
Yeah.
You know, that may be fine for a small business or like, you know, like a restaurant, if that's what you're doing. But like for a church who's built on like excitement and bringing about the kingdom of God, this is not all that exciting, right? Like,
yeah,
the goal is to work so hard that at the end of the year we're in the exact same spot.
Yeah.
Like that's that. Not, yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely. That's like running on a treadmill. Like we went nowhere, but we landed in the exact same spot we started.
Yeah. And treadmills can be very effective training for a short period of time.
Great. Yeah. I don't run, so. Here we go. Number two.
All right.
Here's the other thing your church can do.
Okay.
Shift right.
Politically.
Politically right.
Lean into the conservative nature of your faith, your church, etc.
100%. And this is, look, the data is going to back this up.
Yep.
Most American churches and churchgoers are conservative.
Yep.
Both theologically and politically.
Mm-hmm.
That the majority of American Christianity is this. And so, like, lean into it.
Yeah.
Not now. Don't stop dancing around it. Stop.
And we should say, when we're talking about lean into the political conservative nature of this, right? So
correct.
So your congregation and the voice that your congregation proclaims a conservative political voice, not even just a conservative theology, but an open and blatant conservative political voice. Am I hearing that right?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And I will say this. I think this is actually kind of this could be effective if the goal is grow numbers.
Yes.
Like, if that's your goal, I honestly think this might be an effective way to do that.
In a lot of parts of the country, yeah.
This absolutely. Is not a church I necessarily want to be a part of,
mm-hmm.
but I would acknowledge its effectiveness.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason is people on the political left have like avenues and areas where they can kind of be politically left outside mm-hmm. of church mm-hmm. and it's fine, right? Like, yeah. like if you know, probably most businesses are at least going to like have a veneer of like throw up your pride flag,
sure,
whatever. If you want pronouns in your email, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But if you're anti any of those things, the safest space for you to be is an American church.
Yeah.
Because that is the easiest place where you know nobody's going to be upset if I'm against those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In my business, in my community, at my neighborhood, people might be upset.
Yeah.
But here, nobody's going to be upset. And so it might be people who are conservative politically are looking for community groups, and they're going to be drawn to mm-hmm. churches that share those same political points of view.
Sure.
Because there's not necessarily a place to go
yeah.
as easily as I think people on the left side of the aisle.
Yeah. Now with that, I think the question that we have to wrestle with, right, is the goal of the church simply to grow numbers?
I don't think so.
There we go. So yeah, it could be an effective strategy if your goal is we just need to be bigger. We just need to have more people in this space. Like, if that's your strategy, yeah, you could absolutely reach them by going right. I mean, we've seen any number of organizations and churches accomplishing that goal. If the goal is we want to be a church that's faithfully pursuing faith in Jesus, I don't know that just leaning into hard right conservative politics is going to get you there. In fact, I'm personally pretty confident that leaning into hard right conservative politics is not going to get you closer to Jesus, because there are a lot of stances that the far hard right is taking politically that do not align with baseline teachings of Jesus.
100%. And I think that this is like, you can get there, and maybe for a while it feels like the church is leading the political discussion.
Yep.
But soon the political discussion is leading the church.
Yep.
And if those two things come into conflict, your leaning right politically and your congregation leaning right politically is going to win out.
Yeah.
Like that's you fed a monster that ultimately will consume, you know, like, and I think that that's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
You know, that at some point, and look, you know, if you're conservative or not, both parties will diverge from Christian faith, but one party is going to say, like, we're still kind of pretend that this is Christian faith.
Yeah.
The further it gets, yeah. And that becomes more challenging. I think in a previous podcast, we talked about how some churches were saying, like, pastors need to quit talking about woke politics when they are preaching from the Beatitudes.
Yeah.
And, like, at that point, like, if you can't even talk about what Jesus said mm-hmm. because it offends the political right.
Yep.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Why do this at all? This is no longer a church. This is a club. And that's just not going to be. You grew, but you lost church.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's the other one.
Okay.
Shift left.
Oh, okay. Could go either way.
Okay. Yeah. All right. This
two
is
two roads diverged in yellow wood, and we chose
the left path.
Yes, or not. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, this is shifting left. So, okay. Now. Less churches are doing this,
sure,
but some certainly are.
Yeah, and again, to say this would be aligning hard with the far left political spectrum.
Correct.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and this is saying, like, hey, the people who are politically left and are looking for a church home and are probably turned off by more conservative, or outwardly conservative churches, and saying, like, I don't think there's really a home for here for me when I go to Bible study and we just can't talk about the Bible or we can't talk about the Bible from my point of view.
Sure.
We end up, you know, talking about it from a more MAGA or conservative right point of view, finding a left-leaning church.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that I'm going to have many of the same critiques that I had of finding a church that's leaning hard right. I think if you're leaning hard right in either direction based on political motivations, you're eventually going to be straying from the words of Jesus. And if your goal is simply to grow members, you could probably accomplish that in the short term. If your goal is to build up faithful followers of Jesus, eventually, right, just like you said before, the political leaning is going to win out, right? There's going to come a point when you're leaning left. And maybe right now, at this like particular moment in time, you might say, oh, this seems to align more. There might be things that you feel like align more. But eventually, it's going to win out, right?
Yeah.
As long as you're leaning or aligning with the political spectrum over your faith in Jesus, it's going to win eventually.
Absolutely. And I think, too, you'll end up in the same spot, right? Well, yeah. That I think we kind of land on. Now, I think you can definitely, like, if you're, like, leaning into a more progressive theology of, like, let's relook at what the Bible says about these things that we've held on to for so long and ask some different questions of what does... Is this actually what we're saying when we read these Bible verses? I think it'd be very valuable and very, mm-hmm. I think that's something that our church does and our podcast tries to do is to not throw out the Bible, but to relook at it with a acknowledgement that we're looking at it from an American lens, all those things attached to it. But I think both sides can ultimately just throw out the Bible and like, are they throwing away Jesus to embrace their politicalness?
Yes.
And
we talked recently about the political right making the move to align with Israel in their defense against Iran based on this biblical theology of they don't need the Bible to do that, right? They're choosing to use that but they have political motivations for that, right? That's just one example. You could come up with things on the left too, right? There's just one example of how we're using this as a tool to get what we want. It's not necessary for that, but it's an effective marketing tool to bring people along with our particular stance.
Sure. All right. There you go. Number. Right.
So that's three.
That's three. Number four.
Okay.
Become an unchurch.
An unchurch.
Unchurch.
Right. Tell me more about this, because this one is not as clear from the get-go.
Basically, unchurches. We're still church,
yeah,
but we're not like those other churches.
Okay, we're like your new stepdad.
we're
still your dad, but we're not like that other dad. Okay.
Yeah, and so I think this is actually interesting.
Okay, tell me more about it because I'm still a little bit confused. What do we mean that we're not? Like
because this might be This one's harder to define for because every church can look drastically different than the one before.
Because we're unchurched.
We're unchurched. This could be, we're not a church. We're home groups, meeting in community.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't have a building.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, maybe a school that we meet into on Sunday mornings, and then we do Bible study in people's homes.
Sure.
We're out. We're not a church. You know, we're these faith communities bringing together something different. So maybe a home-based strategy. Maybe this is leaning theologically more into a deconstruction theology of like, ask all the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that means some things that we held dear get thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's harder to do from a church point of view than an individual point of view because we're all going to disagree on what needs to be thrown out and what needs to stay. But theologically.
Yeah.
But I think this is saying like, you know what? We're not doing church the way American church does it. We're doing church the way Christians have done church for hundreds of years when they didn't have buildings or cathedrals.
Yeah.
This is what they did.
I think this one's got some legs. I think the key here is that it can look different in every single place, right? And so being unchurched, I think, to me, is kind of like the antithesis to the status quo. Like, unchurched is how are we going to think about who we are and how we identify and live into the parts of us that are most aligning with Jesus and let go of the things that are not, right? I think churches often want to live into the thing that's going to help us, but we are very bad at letting go of things, right? And this is Lord of Life. This is congregations all over the country where we have storage rooms filled with stuff from 50, 60, 70 years ago because of a memory or because of a thing that used to happen, right? And, you know, in some ways, it's just like the perfect metaphor for all the literal baggage that churches are carrying forward. And I do think deconstruction is helpful in that context, not because I think that everything about Christian faith is wrong or needs to be critiqued, but I think that if we're not wrestling with it, if we're not asking the question, then we're just following blindly. And that's not what Jesus asked his disciples to do either, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's something really meaningful about wrestling with the questions and then coming to an answer that's like, yeah, I do find this faithful. Or saying, I'm not sure I do, and struggling with that, right? I mean, the name Israel means the ones who wrestled with God, right? Like, you know, the faith of our forefathers and our foremothers is one of struggle and wrestling with trying to understand how God is at work in the world.
I agree completely. I think that that this is very, very interesting. And I think it matters. I think this one is the hardest of the four for
Absolutely.
A church
yeah.
to do.
Yes.
This feels more of like a handful of people saying,
yeah.
Let's start on church is far easier than like an established worshiping community saying like we're abandoning what we've done for X number of years and that we all clearly find some level of value in it or else why are we here to do this new thing that we don't even know if it's going to work.
Yeah. Now, I do think there are ways that churches can live into a new thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, maybe this is outside of his five pathways, but I think there are levels of this unchurched thing that you could live into.
Sure.
That perhaps continue, but you know, when we look at an organization like the ELCA, right, this national denomination thing, is that going to be here in 30 years? Is it going to be here in 10 years? Like, I don't know, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
and so even there's a level of okay, our Lutheran church is going to be splitting off into these splinter denominations or independent denominations. Even that, in a way, is you know leaning into this kind of unchurched thing to say we're going to do something different. It's going to look different than it was before. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, number five.
Okay.
Die with dignity.
I like this one.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you why I like this one. Because I have an example of this, right? There's a church in my hometown, Dayton, Ohio. And they were down to like, I don't know, 20, 30 members. And they had this huge endowment. And they could have lived off that endowment for another 20, 30 years. And instead, they said, you know what? We can sell this building, which is a very valuable piece of property in downtown Dayton. We can have this endowment. We can then use that money to support all sorts of ministries and causes that we care about, and we can find other church homes. Like, we lose our building, we lose this place that's meaningful to us, but our legacy becomes supporting these ministries that are doing the work on our behalf that we can't do ourselves.
Yeah.
That's not the only way, but I think that's one example of a congregation that said, God's ministry matters more than my emotional attachment to a building.
Yeah.
And that's what I think of when I hear about dying with dignity. And so I don't want every congregation to have to go through that, right?
Sure.
You know, we've talked about this before. God is always going to have a church Until Jesus comes back, God is always going to have a church.
Absolutely.
The church is always going to look different. And are we going to live into that new thing with dignity and with pride, trusting in God to lead us forward? Or are we going to cling to this thing that has provided me with a certain amount of nostalgia and emotional comfort, even though that thing's not actually God? And what are we going to cling to, the building or to God, God's self? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this is an important one. And I don't think that this, like, look, some churches are like just holding on to hold on.
Yeah.
And like we kind of acknowledge that. But this is more of like we acknowledge that everything has a life cycle, including my congregation.
Yep.
And the people that are there, this is the end. Like once X donor dies, it's probably just over. And how do we use these last remaining months, years, whatever, in a dignified manner, to say like what is this going to be when these people are no longer worshiping in this space? And I think that's a very valuable and interesting question that churches are going to have to wrestle with, and also to say like, and it's okay. That's
it,
how every person is going to have to go out at some point.
Resurrection only comes through death.
And we can go to Europe and see the most gorgeous and beautiful cathedrals and acknowledge that on Sunday mornings, they're not full.
Yeah.
Like, they're more filled with tourists taking photos than worshipers experiencing Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, like, because those churches died out, even though they built the most gorgeous, you know, architecture for churches in Europe, you know. Like,
absolutely.
But this is going to be a thing. Yeah. And
I do think that it's important to distinguish, and we kind of alluded to it, but I just want to say it out, right? The difference between the status quo.
Yeah,
and the status quo living until they die, right? Because the status quo is going to die, right? And so am I just clinging to the status quo until I die, or am I living with dignity until I die? And there are two different approaches. Same result, but the two very different ways of approaching that. And even if you spend time around people who are actively dying, right? This happens in people's own life too, right? Am I living into this, trusting in this moment, or am I trying to cling to something that's never going to be again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is more, I'm a semi-retired or I've reached retirement age pastor saying, like, you know what? I'm going to serve this community, you know, in this next stage of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be it.
Yeah.
And that is not a, we're just trying to make budget this year. This is an acknowledgement that this is the end for this community and nothing is going to come to save it. That's just not going to happen. And we do not have the energy, the resources, the personnel to breathe new life into this.
Yeah.
It's just going to end, and that's okay.
It is okay.
Yeah. And so those are five that Martin came up with. He acknowledges it's not an exhaustive list.
No, but I think those are five helpful lists.
But I think it's saying like, American 21st century churches, which of these five are you leaning into?
Yeah.
So what about our church? Which of these five are we doing?
Yeah. You know, I don't know if it's one of these five or maybe an amalgam of several of them. I won't go so far as to say that we're like blazing our own path. That's number six. Or I don't know. We're quite there. I think we're probably leaning most heavily into the unchurch.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that we're throwing out everything about us, but I think we are trying to live into something new for us and different for us. And that in some ways is keeping really meaningful ministries going, but it's also a practice of letting go of things that have, you know, lived their time and seeing what new, right? You're starting new small groups this summer. We've got new Bible study opportunities that are looking very different than they did before. Yeah. I think there are ways in which we're doing that. There's also ways in which we're leaning status quo. And I think that's something for us to be aware of. Like what does it mean for us to be comfortable and know that that might not be sustainable for the long term?
Yeah, I think we probably, some status quo, maybe some shifting left. Maybe some unchurched.
Yeah.
You know, those three things kind of some level, you know, it's not like we're pouring 100% of our energy into one or the other. But some level of all three, and maybe some things that we're not even quite sure that we can identify, you know, like that we're kind of figuring out. All those things can be kind of happening at once.
I do think, like, I hear you on the shifting left, and I think there are some areas in which, you know, that certainly is a perception. I think that perception comes from the notion that so much of Christianity is so vocally right. And so
I think so.
So to be aligning with Jesus in so many ways, right? Because I don't think we're saying like, we need to go and everybody needs to be Democrats, right? Like that's not our push.
I agree completely.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. But I do think like, we're going to lean really heavy into Jesus and the way that we see Jesus's love manifested in the world.
Yeah.
Apparently makes us lean left.
Yeah. I think it's more theologically we see these things in Jesus.
Yes.
With a greater level of equality amongst the sexes and a greater level of inclusion, especially for those who are LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
That's theologically, that's where we landed on.
Yep.
And because our other churches in our area don't have those things, it gives us a unique message to our community.
It does.
And so sometimes we lean into that message, which feels like leaning left, but we're also kind of letting our community know, if you are a gay couple, you're welcome here. And we want to advertise that. Now, if you're a straight couple, you're welcome here.
Absolutely.
If you're a divorced couple, you're welcome here. If you're not in a couple.
Divorced couple?
Well, you know, if you're a remarried couple, you're married here. If you are not a couple at all, you're married here.
Yeah.
Or you're welcome here. But by saying, if you're a gay couple, you're welcome here, it feels a little bit like we're leaning into the left.
Yes.
Because other churches aren't saying that.
Yes.
Or they don't want to, either by intentionally not wanting to say it or intentionally not wanting to anger the people who are not there theologically.
Right.
And I think we're a little more willing to say, like, we are there and we're welcoming you in. And some of our people, or some people in our community, might not fully be 100% aligned on that statement, but are on board with saying, I want to explore what it means to welcome more people.
Yep. Yeah. And we want to keep wrestling with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it is a wrestle. But I would understand if somebody said that. But I don't but I've seen some churches who I think lean very heavily left.
Yes.
And I think, ugh.
Yeah, we're not that.
It puts a bad taste in my mouth just as much as churches who lean very heavily right. Even if I'm like, I think they're correct politically or correct theologically, I do not like what they're doing. And I think it's ultimately exclusionary inclusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's a fun term, exclusionary inclusion.
Yeah.
I like that. You should coin that. Put
sure.
Put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah. I will. And people are like, what's that? Like, I don't know if I spelled it right anyway.
Well, anything else today, Patrick?
I don't think so.
Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know which of the five paths you think a church should be taking.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a different congregation than the Lord of Life, let us know where your congregation's at and what you're thinking about. You can send that to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Or what you think we should be doing if you're a member of the Lord of Life. Yeah, let us know.
Or you can listen to all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.